Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine.
Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Slow down on Monday. Not a sound on Wednesday.
Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us. Brand new 21 Pilots kicked this one off. That's their single that's coming out next week. Found it a little earlier today on YouTube, and I was rocking to it. It was all right.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I mean, again, a little poppy for me, but not bad or whatever for a Thursday night anyway. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm enjoying the playoffs. Yeah. I am enjoying the playoffs.
For the first time in a few years, we can actually enjoy the play. It's amazing what happens when the Jets aren't there and I'm not stressed out.
I take nothing away from the Jets. I'm not saying yes or no in terms of enjoying that part of it. But what I am saying, though, is that I can't believe there are people complaining about how many goals are being scored.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there are people complaining about how many penalties are being called.
Well, the penalties are one thing, and I get that breaks up the flow of action, but legitimately, and again, I was reading a little bit today, Greg Wyshynski had a little bit on this today, mm-hmm. about the number of goals that are being scored in the playoffs, and I go, are we really complaining about scoring goals after watching Dead Puck Era for how long?
No, because everybody wants Daryl Sutter hockey where it's 2-1.
No.
It's 1-1 until the fifth overtime and somebody finally scores. That's playoff hockey.
No, I'm not going to allow that. That's ridiculous talk right there. So we're not going to have that here on this show. We're going to enjoy the goals. We're going to enjoy everything. And it's important to say that because there's one team that's already gone. One team eliminated already. As we get ready for a little Survivor, a little fun, a little craziness here, as we have a little fun with this, we're going to have Doris on tonight. But Doris has respectfully declined. She did not watch any of the series, she said, because she kind of figured that Nashville had no chance. So, understandable. That means I'm going to let Jason have at it. Jason, you are going to play the role of the exit interview for Nashville. Are you prepared, sir?
I am ready.
All right, let's bring in the old music and see what we can. All right, sir. Have at it. Here is the exit interview for one Nashville Predators.
Well, that was quick. I think this is one of the few times where with NHL playoff hockey, you could have come into this series kind of sure about how it was going to go. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche are, oh boy, that is a team. Can't wait for them to lose in the second round like they usually do. But they had to get there first, and that was Nashville standing in their way. And really, it wasn't Nashville standing in their way. It was Connor Ingram, because the only hope they had in this series was Connor Ingram when he came in Game 2. 2-1 win for Colorado. Then it all kind of just fell apart. A few seven-goal games for the Avalanche, just letting them get rolling. Whoever they wind up playing in the second round, we're sorry. They're ready. They're warmed up. Hopefully they're a little bit rusty after a break, after a four-game sweep. Hopefully. Anyway.
That's Nashville?
Yep.
Nashville, legitimately, yeah, they got their rear end handed to them. And again, I'm going to take nothing away from Nashville. Yep. They came out and they played hard. I mean, give them credit.
You got to make it there.
Give them credit. They got to the playoffs. They certainly didn't get the most favorable matchup, particularly that now that UC Saros was out. And again, you were hoping that Saros was going to return, just couldn't return.
Yeah.
Big save. Dave did not make a save at all in game one, so... Dave Rittich really didn't give them a chance, yeah. But Connor Ingram was outstanding in those last three games and certainly did everything he could to try and help this yeah. team. But at the end of the day, at the end of a series, you're right. I mean, yeah. Too often, oh my God, Cale Makar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kid is going to win a handful of Norris trophies before all is said and done.
Yeah, it's too much firepower for a middling goaltender like David Rittich and a rookie goaltender like Connor Ingram to handle in a series like this. And take nothing away from Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson for how they played this year, Roman Josi for how he played this year. But UC Saros was the MVP for Nashville, and as soon as he went down, you knew it was over.
I mean, Saros legitimately has the most wins for anybody not named...
Pecorine,
right. I was going to say. I was almost about to say Hedberg. And I was like, wait, that's not right. But yeah, I mean, the most wins in a national net for a guy not named Pecorine, you kind of needed him at this point in the season. And I hate to say that, but you kind of did against this team especially.
Yeah, it's one of the, like, if he was there and they could maybe pull off an upset, that would have been a huge, huge thing for them. And it would have been a real shocker. But without him...
Well, at least win a game.
Yeah. I mean, Connor Ingram gave them a shot in game two. Like, him going in there was the shot in the arm that they needed to be competitive in that game, at the very least. But it wasn't really enough for them to sustain.
Well, let's send Nashville on its way. I don't know if there's anything else we really have to talk about. I mean, other than the fact that, again, if you're Cale Makar, you look like a completely different player out there. And I mean, then again, you got the McKinnons, you got the, you know, the Rantanens, you got the
Landeskog,
you got
Devon Taves.
But that's the thing, though. You look down that roster and you go, it's legitimately just, I mean, you're damned if you do, if you don't. I mean, there are so many greats in there anymore.
He got traded for Taves.
Yeah, he got traded for Taves, exactly. But, I mean, you look at the way that they're set up, though. And Gerard's still there.
Oh, that was the one I was looking for.
But you look at the way that they're set up, and you just go, man, this team is loaded.
Yes.
And legitimately, if they run into St. Louis or Minnesota in the next round, which is who they're basically waiting for right now, that's going to be a war in that series.
Yeah. And the other thing is Darcy Kuemper coming in this year to be the replacement for Philip Grubauer, who's now in Seattle.
Right.
What a pickup for them.
See, and everybody questioned that, and I don't understand why, because we've seen Kuemper do amazing things when he gets a little bit of help. And again, I'm not saying that he didn't have any in Arizona, but he didn't have any in Arizona.
Yeah, you don't need to qualify it.
So Darcy Kuemper, legitimately in Arizona, was trying to do a lot of it himself, but we saw when he went to the World Championships how good he could be with a little bit of defense around.
Exactly, and the thing... Philip Grubauer really showed, like, he has not been the most consistent goaltender and for the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs. The trouble that they had year over year was their goaltender staying healthy in the playoffs and having that consistent, solid presence in net, and that's what Darcy Kuemper is for them now.
And, I mean, you hope that the eye injury that he suffered in Game 3 isn't going to affect him anymore. They said it was a little bit of swelling, and they were just going to keep him out for precautionary reasons, but you kind of hope that nothing bad happens on that. But really, I mean, Nashville was...
It's another argument they to get were rid of those cat-eye masks.
Yeah, I mean, again, you can make the argument for... But, I mean, goaltenders are growing up with them now, and they're used to them, so you can't really ask them to change mid-playoffs or whatever. But, again, that's Nashville kind of doomed from the start on that. Mm-hmm. So let's close the book on the Predators for another year.
Travis spoken.
And the Predators are officially done. That's going to bring us to a few other things, though, in terms of the Survivor playoff pool. There have been a number of prizes already won. Five challenges have been taken off the board. Talked a little bit about them last week. John, Dave, and I believe Matt had won prizes. Tyler ended up being the winner for the first goalie point. Louis Domingue picked up the first goalie point of the playoffs. And then Doris wins as the first team eliminated from the playoffs as well. So once the first round is over, I'll get out in touch with everybody. We'll make sure that we get everybody a prize for what they've won. So if you're going, hey, how come I haven't been contacted yet? Hold tight. We're waiting for the first round to end to see what goes on. There may be there may be another prize handed out, because first upset of the playoffs could happen tonight, for example, in terms of what's going on. But we'll see who wins tonight, who doesn't, but we'll keep an eye on that. Again, first to advance from the second round to the third round will obviously be awarded in the next round. We'll see what happens at that point as well. But Survivor, NHL playoffs, still going, still going to have some fun with that. We're still going to talk about it sort of weekly and everything like that. But that is the setup for what's happening. Looking at the other playoff series now, St. Louis 3-2 over Minnesota. What do you think of that series, Jay?
I'm not happy about that. my bet was Minnesota was going to win the cup this year, so I'm in a worrisome spot right now.
Cam Talbot starting game 6, according to everybody in Minnesota. He took the he was off in the starter's goal tonight, or the starter's goal today. They've a couple of players have let it slip that Talbot's going to be the guy tonight, so Cam Talbot starting the game in place of Marc-Andre Fleury. First start since the end of February.
Yeah, and that's kind of... He basically... Like, Fleury showed up there and basically just took over the crease. And I questioned that trade when it happened, because I thought Cam Talbot was doing quite well for himself, and having Kapokakinen as his backup, I had no problem with throughout the series. You know, Cam Talbot's not like a world-beating goaltender, but he's a solid guy. He's been solid when he's been in Minnesota. So I was wondering, like, why would you pick up Fleury? And now he's going to be called upon to coming in cold to presumably try and get them, force a game 7 for them.
I'll be very honest. I have not known, and I'm trying to think of any, and I'm really racking my brain here. I don't know of any team that has made a trade for a goalie at the trade deadline and gone on to win the cup.
Never.
Like a backup goalie I can see, yeah, or whatever. Like, that's fine. But trading for a starting goaltender at the deadline, I can't think of any team that's done that in recent memory.
Well, you think about like how what it does to a team, right? Like you're basically you have a completely unknown variable behind you, and you don't know how to play, you don't know how they fit into the system, where the blocks need to come from, where they like their eye lines to be, what kind of pressure they like from what angles. There's a whole lot of chemistry that you build up, specifically with defensemen and their goaltender. You build that up over the course of years, and in crunch time in the playoffs, you want to rely on that muscle memory, and you don't have that if you have a new guy that's just come in. Like, the one that I always jump to is the Ryan Miller trade for St. Louis and trying to bring in Martin Brodeur to
worked out well.
Exactly, and it seems that every single time there is a guy, a goaltender, that is being traded to go to a team at the trade deadline to be like the last missing piece. The goaltender should not be your last missing piece for winning. It should be a guy you plug in on like the second or third line that gets you through.
So the question becomes then, because we bring up goaltending, we bring up obviously the last, you know, sort of that last piece. Calgary and Dallas has been a last goalie standing kind of setup where it's legitimately, again, I take nothing away from the way Calgary has played, I take nothing away from Dallas has played, but this has legitimately been some of the worst hockey in the playoffs, only because neither of these teams seems to want to give an inch. I'm enjoying the Klingberg-Kachuk battle, but beyond that, I have not tuned into a game, only because give me a reason to.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm watching when I do watch those games, the only thing I'm watching for is to watch Jake Ottinger play hockey, because I really like him as a goaltender, and to watch Joe Pavelski just be vintage Joe Pavelski for some reason in this series.
Turned it back 20 years in terms of the way he's playing, yeah.
Like, I remember a few days ago, I was building a bookshelf, like a bookcase, and looked up, and it was like 1-0. I looked down, finished the bookcase, got it standing, looked back, and the score hadn't changed. And I was just like, oh, awesome.
That's it. Did it finish as 1-0 as well, that in game one? So,
well, you know.
I mean, again, I just don't find it to be fun hockey right now. And I don't know how these teams are enjoying playing that, because legitimately, if you get out of that series, you're going to be pretty much playoff hardened, which is great. But
you're going to be worn down.
But yeah, I mean, the exhaustion alone might kill you in the next round. But speaking of that, their competition will be one of the underwhelming Oilers, or perhaps the playing above their head LA Kings, as LA has a 3-2 lead over a team that we have been told over and over and over and over again is good enough to win the Stanley Cup.
And over and over and over again, we've responded, no, they're not. They have a 41-year-old in net who is constantly getting injured, and his backup is a guy that, for some reason, you allowed Peter Chiarelli to throw money at after a mediocre season.
I mean, you can make a case for the bad player moves that Ken Holland has made the entire way through. Don't get me wrong. I get that Evander Kane was a great goal-scoring phenom towards the end of the season once he came in with, you know, playing alongside...
Duncan Keith train.
But hold on, though. Kane's not playing with them anymore. Mm-hmm. They've moved Yamamoto up and Dreisaitl up to play with McDavid. Do you really think you're going to get a ton of offense out of Kane if he's playing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
The thing is, coming into this series, they should have known. The LA Kings have Philip Deneau. Philip Deneau, who shut down the Toronto Maple Leafs, who shut down the Winnipeg Jets, who shut down the Vegas Golden Knights, who almost shut down the Tampa Bay Lightning. The only difference between the Lightning and the rest of those teams is the Lightning have more than, like, one line.
So more than one legitimate goal scorer?
Exactly. So by putting your three best offensive weapons on one line, you're basically just signing your death certificate.
Again, that overtime that happened the other night or whatever was legitimately the best moment of the playoffs so far. We saw Evander Kane fall, and then we saw Duncan Keith completely lose his mind when he had no idea how to defend that goal. And I just go, what are you doing? Like, this is the stuff that you told us about at the beginning of the season when you made the deal. This is why we're bringing him in. He's a reliable, he's steady, he'll keep things on, you know. He just got walked.
Yes.
Like, he's terrible.
Like, just say that you wanted to help the Chicago Blackhawks with their money problems and go. Because you weren't improving your team whatsoever.
No.
But a great argument that I saw for the Edmonton Oilers is the idea of dressing an extra defenseman, because we don't know if Darnell Nurse is going to play.
He's suspended for one game.
One game,
so he's
suspension.
Out.
I didn't see that. Dress an extra defenseman so you can... you know, share that load between multiple players, and then just have rotating Dreisaitl and McDavid fill that spot as the center on the fourth line.
That would work in terms of the way that you could do it. But again, you're now talking, and again, I'm not saying that Woodcroft wouldn't do that, but we're now talking about game management, and I don't know if anybody's willing to make that change in the playoffs, right? Like, that's the thing, is that coaches are pretty much... we're stuck in this, and we're going to get through this now. But
and that's why the Edmonton Oilers aren't going to win a Stanley Cup anytime soon.
And I hate to say it, but it'll be another year of Connor McDavid golfing in May as opposed to golfing in July. So
exactly.
Florida somehow, some way, keeps finding ways to win against Washington despite giving up early leads the entire series long. Florida Panthers are the comeback kids.
Yeah, it's crazy, because watching those games, there are times where I feel like Washington just has their number, and I'm like, okay, this game is over, and then it's not. Like, they just keep bouncing back, they keep coming back. I still don't have a lot of confidence in playoff Bobrovsky.
I look at Bobrovsky as not the problem, but those five defenders, Aaron Ekblad is the only one that looks competent out there, but the other five defenders are lost most of the time. They have no idea how to defend Ovechkin and Backstrom and Oshie, and like, they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. Ben Sherrod is an absolute hole in the ice.
But Forsling
is the second leading player on your team in terms of time on ice, there's a huge problem there.
Yeah. That's the thing, and this is it's a great team.
Oh, fun team.
Don't get me wrong on that. They've got a lot of really good weapons, but the playoffs is when the cracks start to show.
Yeah.
And this is a team that will won a lot of overtime games. Right?
Well, and won a lot of sprints, as opposed to a lot of marathons.
Exactly. They need to. And it's not, I'm not saying like, oh, this is just
again,
like
you
the
can fall behind in a sprint,
through.
But if you got the gear to turn it up, and which they do,
exactly.
They won a lot of games this year because they can do that.
But the playoffs are a marathon.
Right.
You can't come out and respond. You can't play that sprint game and that catch-up game every single game and expect to go three rounds deep and try and win a Stanley Cup.
We're going to leave the next series just till the end, because that's the one where we're going to have some fun with. But 3-2 Carolina over Boston. I'm not going to say this to be mean, but I think it's over for Boston.
I would agree with you.
And I'm not talking over just this playoff series. I mean, I'm talking about over. Like, this is their last legitimate shot at a deep run if they don't get by Washington.
We've been
Washington.
Saying that for or a few years
Carolina.
Now, and I think it's finally starting to show. Like, losing, like, the goaltending situation there, losing Chara, him going, really hurts them. I don't think people that are talking about, like, Patrice Bergeron going somewhere when his contract is up or getting traded somewhere, like, that's not going to happen.
No.
But it's really showing with the talent that's left that team, like the Charas, the Krugs, the Rasks, the Bruins of old are really not there anymore. And while they have repaired the relationship with Jake DeBrusk, I believe, and he's starting to feel a little bit more comfortable there, I think on the one hand, they are heavily outmatched by a Carolina Hurricanes team that will go through a brick wall.
If not, Rod will just throw you through the brick wall.
Exactly. So. He wants to get through that brick wall. but yeah, I think, I don't know if, I don't think they're going to have like a major fall off next year, but I think we're going to start seeing it trending in that direction because Bergeron's getting older. Marchand's getting older.
Marchand's 37. He'll be 38 next season. Like, you look at how well he played this season, though, and you legitimately think, okay,
how
like
many more miles does he have on him, though?
Not only that, but I mean, Marchand, you know, Bergeron, Pasternak hasn't changed for a few seasons now. How many more tricks do they have up their sleeve where they can keep finding ways to score? Like, you look at that, you need a second line in Boston. Who's their second line center? If anybody can name that guy right now, he's probably on the witness protection program because I haven't seen him all series so far.
It's one of those things where like we always try and say like, okay, the Penguins are going to start to fall off now, or like the Bruins are going to fall off now, and they keep proving us wrong. Eventually, we have to be right that they're going to start falling off, and I think with where Bergeron's at, with where Marchand's at, with the goaltending situation, with what's happening with the defense, like the prospects that just aren't there for them in the system, really, that bill is coming due, I think, sooner than people realize.
Well, and I think that's the scary part, is that this is legitimately, if any one of those three guys from the top line decides to move on, that this team is completely demolished at that point.
Yeah.
And I like Charlie McAvoy. Don't get me wrong. McAvoy is great, but McAvoy can't be back there by himself.
No. Because right now he is by himself.
Yeah.
Like, that's really all that they have. And right now they're up against a very good, very, very good Carolina Hurricanes team. Like, goaltending issues aside, like, they're...
Antti Raanta is a good goaltender. Again, and I hate to say it, but Arizona is where everybody legitimately goes to get completely, you know, washed and re-sort of purposed at that point. Mike Smith, Antti Raanta.
Were people not paying attention when Antti Raanta was with the Chicago Blackhawks?
Darcy Kemper. I mean, you look at these guys that have gone down there and you go... A lot of good goalies have come out of Arizona. After they leave Arizona, they all of a sudden become that goalie.
But they were like, Arizona made the playoffs because of their goaltending, because the two guys that they had, both of them are looking like they're going to the second round right now.
That whole Carolina team, though, that second line, that third line, that fourth line, and then you look at the back end as well, and you just go, man, like, they're loaded, and they're going to be good for probably a few years, so... Mm-hmm. If Carolina advances, I won't be surprised, but they kind of should advance. So, yeah. Pittsburgh Rangers, which we just kind of alluded to, we're playing without the top two goaltenders in Pittsburgh. We're playing without their number two defender in Dumoulin. They're now playing likely without Crosby in Game 6 after Crosby's inadvertent bump into Trouba's elbow that... was not penalized, was not suspended for, because they said it was just incidental contact, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't like this Pittsburgh team without their captain in the lineup. You can get by with Louis Domingue, you can get by with Marcus Pettersson filling in for Dumoulin. You lose a large chunk of offense, obviously losing Crosby, but you also lose that entire second line, because now Malkin has to step up, now McCann has to step up, now somebody else has got to jump into that position. And there is nobody that can play between Rust and Gensel like Sidney Crosby can.
Exactly. Like, Crosby's that guy that makes everyone around him better. Like, he made Chris Kunitz's career. And he's made Brian Rust's career so far. And you lose kind of a heart and soul thing. Like, playoff Sidney Crosby is a completely different animal.
Yes.
And every time I watch him play in the playoffs, I am just angry that we lost so much of prime Sidney Crosby, because, like, I'm already he's not even done playing yet, and I'm already nostalgic for watching Sidney Crosby play hockey.
I'm glad you brought that up, because there was a person today that came out and said it. Do you know how many games players have been suspended for headshots on Crosby? Total.
Probably combined. Like one.
The answer is one game. The guy has missed a full season plus more of hockey, and his opponents who hit him mm-hmm. high only missed one game. Again, I'm not out here to apologize for Crosby. I mean, again, you can yell at me all you want. I'm a Penguins mm-hmm. fan. But I legitimately agree with you. We have missed a significant chunk of a very good player's career, if yep. not a Hall of Famer's career, just because either players are taking runs at him and there's nobody there to protect him, or yep. the league won't protect him because...
The league doesn't protect anybody.
Well, it's a headshot, and that's part of the game.
Sorry, the league protects the fourth-line grinder guys that should be suspended more often than
again,
they are.
David Steckel, Jake Truba. I mean, I can't think of the other guys that put him out. But, again, looking at that, I agree with you, though. I mean, that's a huge, huge loss. And, mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. Rangers took advantage of it yesterday. The Penguins looked lost after Crosby mm-hmm. went down. And they scored, you know, 3-4 quick goals, and that was it. So.
I think that this is definitely a situation where I think the Penguins can pull it out. I think they can weather the storm and get through it, just because where this Rangers team is at with kind of how fresh they really are. When you look at some of the underlying numbers with this Rangers team, there's something when I look at it, even when I watch them play, I'm like, there's something missing here. I think an experienced playoff experienced team, a veteran team like the Penguins, with a coach like Mike Sullivan, can weather this storm and get to the next round, and then hopefully we'll have Crosby back in the lineup, and then, you know, you can't bet against Sidney Crosby.
Right. Two shots. The Penguins will play at home tomorrow, so a good chance maybe for the Penguins to wrap it up there. But the final series, Toronto and... they'll be playing at home. Toronto and Tampa Bay, Game 6 in Florida tonight. I don't want to put the cart before the horse in any situation with Toronto, because they always end up breaking people's mm-hmm. hearts, but is this the year?
I think there's always one player with the Toronto Maple Leafs who, when the playoffs come around, one of their big guys disappears, and right now, for this series specifically, John Tavares has been invisible, but Mitch Marner, Auston Matthews, Morgan Rielly have been unbelievable. They have been unbelievable. Like, here's the thing. Auston Matthews, to me, has completely turned a corner. He is no longer the guy that just puts up goals and, like, Mark Scheifele controller disconnects as soon as he's back checking. This is a guy that's got a 200-foot game now, and I think has the tools to be like a real leader for this team, and the guy that you need, the leader that you need in the playoffs. I'm worried about certain things with this team. I'm worried about the amount of, like, picking at the scab that Sheldon Keefe has been doing with his lineup, even in games, the amount of movement, the amount of line changing. Like, for some reason, people took the wrong lessons from Quenneville when he was coaching Chicago to those Stanley Cups. Because he would do that. Like, in between periods, in between shifts, he would switch up lines. He would move guys around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And too many coaches said, oh, micromanaging, that's the way to win a Stanley Cup. No, it's because Quenneville had a bunch of guys that it didn't matter what matchups he put them in, what order he put the guys in, they're going to go out there and perform. The Leafs don't really, while they do have a lot more depth this year, they don't have... Their chemistry is way different. You can't be messing with things like the way that they're messing with things. I don't know why Justin Hall is back in the lineup. I don't understand it. You should not.
Don't ask that question if you're Steve Simmons to Keith, because he...
Okay, I won't phrase it as he's your worst defenseman. That's the dumbest thing to say. But I don't know why he's in the lineup.
Okay, so I'll frame it this way then. Toronto comes in. They've just won Game 5. They're looking to close it out. Tampa Bay has not lost in forever in consecutive games in the playoffs. Does the trend continue for you then? Because I think in Tampa Bay is unbeatable. And I will say that, not that they're unbeatable in terms of any other game or any other time of the year or anything like that, but I think that Tampa Bay gets the right lineups, the right matchups, the right mm-hmm. setup in terms of being able to beat Toronto and force a Game 7.
I think I 100% agree with you. And there's just something about being in Tampa Bay that arena, that fan base is unbelievable. Oh, yeah. The energy that they give that team is unrivaled, I think, in the NHL right now. There are very few barns that I think have what they have right now. I think this is going to seven games because it would be, if this is the year for Toronto to make it through, they have to slay that particular dragon.
Yes. Yeah, that would be helpful. Yeah.
They have to slay that. They cannot avoid that. They have to, if this is a storybook Toronto Maple Leafs going to the Stanley Cup final, they have to win a game seven. They have to beat Boston. And
well, they may not get a chance at Boston, but
yeah. But to get there, they have to slay this particular dragon, and I think it's coming for them. And whether they like it or not, it's coming for them. And the only way to beat Tampa Bay in the playoffs right now is to have home ice advantage, so you have four of seven games at home.
And they do. So, I mean, they've won one on Tampa ice already. Like, Toronto's won one on Tampa ice, which is fine. Again, I have no problem with that, but I think tonight is going to be a Tampa Bay revenge of the Lightning, and they'll go back to play on Saturday in Toronto. So
yeah.
Beyond that, some awards that were nominated for include the Calder Trophy, Michael Bunting, Trevor Zegras, Moritz Seider. I'm surprised that Lucas Raymond wasn't on there, but whatever. I can't make a decision on that myself because I don't get to vote. But I know people are gonna get mad at me if you're a Maple Leafs fan especially. I don't think that Bunting should win this because Bunting played alongside the guy who scored the most goals all season long, and you were second in assists for rookies. Like, your job was basically cross your fingers, hope that Matthews finishes.
Yes.
Whereas Zegras was a highlight reel upon himself, and Seider was unreal for the Detroit Red Wings despite how bad they were.
Yeah, so I think the way that it was phrased was Zegras and Moritz Seider did more with less than Michael Bunting, but Michael Bunting had more of like an impact in games and situations that mattered.
I would say you're right on that, but I still disagree with that because again, you can't people are going to Gretzky said, you know, had 193 assists one year, you know, he won the Hart Trophy. I get it, but Gretzky was also scoring 100 goals a year as well.
Yeah.
Like there's a big difference between I'm not taking away from Bunting. I know that he was tied for second in goals with 23.
And it looks like he's found a home with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right. Looks like he's going to play alongside the top line and be very good in terms of what's getting in there. I have no problem with Toronto boosting, you know, Michael Bunting's sort of setup, but we're talking about who's going to be the next best player, one of the next best players for a while. If you take Michael Bunting out of that situation, is he the same player?
No,
and
he's
that's
not.
And so that's the question. If you took Trevor Zegras out of that question, would
he's still Trevor Zegras?
If you took Seider out of that, would he still
Seider.
And that's how you adjudicate the rookie of the year, because if he can do that in another situation on another team as well, he deserves to be nominated for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I don't think they should really overthink it. It's more at Seider. Like, it's been him all year long. Trevor Zegras is going to have an amazing career. If out of those three guys, I think Zegras is going to have the best career of all three of them. But I think you can't look at what their career is going to be. You have to look at what this first year was and the amount of the level that Seider was this year with the Detroit Red Wings, and what he got that team to do while he was there
finished 13 points behind Bunting as a defenseman on a team that finished basically dead last all season long.
It's always been more. I don't know where this debate.
It doesn't have to be. Like I'm agreeing with you in that these three players, I would vote for Seider in a heartbeat.
Oh, me too. But it's been there for some reason. There's been this debate all season. Is it Bunting? Is it Seider? Is it Raymond? No, it's been more at Seider the entire season. It's like.
I you won't get an argument from me. He's legitimately the best defenseman, first year defenseman that we've seen in many years. So. Again, if we're throwing, you know, caution to the wind, I'm voting Seider on that one.
Yep.
I Hedman, Yossi, Makar named as Norris Trophy finalists. I want to give it to Makar, but Yossi's season was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I have to vote for Yossi in this only because I don't think any other... I mean, he legitimately was on track to score 100 if he would have played in every game or whatever. But I love Cale Makar. Cale Makar is going to win 100 of these trophies before he retires. But Roman Josi had a season to remember.
Yep. Like, Nick Lidstrom didn't win the Norris every single year he was in the NHL.
Right.
Because somebody else has to win it eventually. I think this is Josi's year to get it. I don't think...
96 points.
Out of the three, Hedman is third. Very easily third. When you... Like, exactly that. 96 points as a defenseman. And the impact that he had for that Nashville Predators team is way higher than Makar had for the Colorado Avalanche because of the guys that were around him.
Yep, I agree.
Who does Roman Josi have around him right now?
Mark Borowiecki.
There you go.
I will say this, and this is the one thing, the one stat that stood out to me. Ray Bourque was the last player, the last defenseman to break 90 points in a season. He did that in 93-94. Mm-hmm. If Roman Josi can put up 90 points on a Nashville team that finished 8th in the conference, Roman Yossi's doing something right.
Yes, he deserves it. On a team that does not have the talent that a team like Colorado has.
Right.
Or a team like Tampa Bay has.
I'm all for Roman Josi. Again, I like Makar a lot. Hedman's going to be there forever as well. He's going to be in nominations until he basically retires at this point. But Josi's season was just one for the ages, so give it to him. Markstrom, Saros, Shesterkin. I like Markstrom. I like Saros. I like Shesterkin in terms of the way that these were played. You can't not give this to Shesterkin the way he played in terms of how good he was for the Rangers this season.
Did anybody believe the Rangers were going to make the playoffs coming into this year?
No.
Exactly, and they're there. So, conversation over.
That's all it needs to be said at that point.
If you even look at the advanced stats, like goals saved above expected, he's up here at the top of the Empire State Building. Yeah. The next closest guy is down on the ground floor.
Hart Trophy sees Shesterkin get nominated again. And again, it's great to be nominated. He's already won the Vezina. You're not going to win two trophies in my league, though. Matthews and McDavid with them. We had this conversation prior to the show starting. I think this is an absolute slap in the face because Matthews already won a trophy. He won the Rocket Richard. McDavid already won a trophy. He won the Art Ross. You can't be the Hart Trophy winner if you lead the league in some stat. You have to be the most valuable player in the league. And to me... guys like Nathan MacKinnon and Jonathan Huberdeau should be there in that place because they were the top players on the top two teams in the league.
Yeah.
Bar none.
Exactly. Like, it's just... Also, Shesterkin, you're the last guy to win that, the last goaltender to win the Hart Trophy was just on another planet.
Some guy named Hasek? Vasilevsky? Well, no, Vasilevsky didn't
win. It was... I know... back in the day, I think Jose Theodore won it one year.
Did he? Oh, that's right. He did. I think you're right. Carey Price won it. There you go.
It's only Montreal goalies that can win the Hart and the Vezina in the same year.
There we go.
And you're realistically, I think this is just me thinking out loud. I think Austin Matthews is going to win the Hart. I agree. They're finally going to just say, okay, there's a good Toronto Maple Leaf now that's able to win an individual award. Okay, we'll give it to him. I think the guy that should get it, Jonathan Huberdeau.
I think so as well.
Or
he was my pick.
The other pick, Kirill Kaprizov.
Kaprizov would have been a great pick as well for this. Again, he didn't have the points to back it up, but I think Kaprizov is the straw that stirs that drink in Minnesota.
But
so
that the wording of the award.
I know what I get it.
Most important player
to his
team.
I get it.
Where would that team be without?
See, and that
him?
and that's the setup I have for voting for Matthews is that without those 60 goals from Matthews this season, Toronto's nothing compared to where
exactly.
they are right now. So Matthews to me wins the Hart Trophy just because again, they're. McDavid, I get it. You got scored 123 points, but they got Dreisaitl, they got Kane, they have a whole bunch of other decent players. Mm-hmm. Again, those 60 goals by Matthews, though, eclipsed everybody else. Yeah. And certainly, that's my thought in terms of him winning mm-hmm. the trophy there. So, there we go. A little bit of fun there. We got about 20 minutes remaining. Got to go through some fun news here. Lots of Manitoba news, lots of University of Manitoba news as well. We'll start with, and it's all coaching fun, and well, except for one. We'll talk about one in a second. But For those that know, Venla Hovi, she was assistant coach here with the Manitoba Bisons for a year, decided to take a head coaching job of the Okanagan Hockey Academy for their U-17 team. Mm-hmm. I was cruising through Twitter the other day and noticed that they had an opening for a female, for the U-17 female hockey team. Venla, isn't that your team? What's going on? Like, did you get promoted? Like, did you get promoted to the U-18 or whatever? She said, I got an offer I couldn't refuse. What? What? Right. What do you mean you got details at the end of the week? Okay, sure, no problem, whatever. Congratulations, whatever it is, you're going to do great, ain't no big deal. Venla Hovi has been appointed the head coach of the PHF Metropolitan Riveters. Venla Hovi will now coach a professional hockey team.
Absolutely incredible. Completely, so deserved.
You know what?
She has a genius hockey mind. She was an amazing player.
She will change players there. Yes.
If you're going to grow women's hockey, you need talented women in high positions.
So again, speaking of talented women, here's her resume. If you're asking how did Venla get this, we know she played for the Olympic team, the Finnish Olympic team, but how did she get in here? Okay, so here's the answer for that. Again, she spent two seasons with the female U-17 prep team, the Okanagan Hockey Academy. She was fantastic there. Helped a number of players move on and get opportunities. She was behind the bench as the head coach with the University of Manitoba, as we know, assistant coach alongside John Rempel. She spent time with True North, where she served as a full-time Jets hockey development on-ice instructor. So she was instructing, coaching, all that kind of stuff there. She legitimately won a Clarkson Cup with the Calgary Inferno. Mm-hmm. She legitimately won a national championship with the University of Manitoba. She legitimately won a silver medal against the U.S. at the World Championships. She has done more than anybody. And she went on to found VH Hockey back in Finland, which is a basically an elite performance camp for kids coming out of Finland. Like, this woman at the age of 34 has done more than I'll ever do in my life.
Yeah.
And now she's coaching pro hockey.
Yeah, it's just like the next step in her illustrious career. People shouldn't be surprised that she's there, and people shouldn't be surprised if the Riveters just tear it up next year.
See, I'm interested to see, you know, because they're going to fill out a roster and all that kind of stuff or whatever, but I'm interested to see how well she does there. But I think, again, I think this is the right move for Venla. I think that this opportunity was one she couldn't turn down, so mm-hmm. good on her. Speaking of coaches, Mount Royal is going to lose a coach this year. As Jordan Colladen, you may not recognize her, but Jordan was the associate coach alongside Scott Rivett. Helped out a lot in terms of everything that she's done there. Jordan has taken a position with Leksands over in the SDHL, the Swedish Women's Hockey League. Jordan, for those who don't know, she's 32. So again, another young woman, like the young women that are getting into the head coaching ranks is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. She's from Blackie, Alberta. She played at the Warner Hockey School and then went to the University of Maine in the NCAA, where she played for the Black Bears. She legitimately got into coaching a little bit. She worked with the Ontario Hockey Academy, worked with the Pursuit of Excellence Hockey Academy in Kelowna, which is now the Rink Hockey Academy in Kelowna. Became the head coach of the Mount Royal in Calgary in 2015-2016 when Scott was getting stuff set up there as well. She's done a whole bunch of stuff in terms of being involved with the Canadian under-18 national team as well with Hockey Canada. Obviously has some great stuff. Jeremy Colladen is a fairly well-known name, her older brother, so a little bit on that. But legitimately a huge opportunity for Jordan next year. She moves over to Leksands and gets into the professional ranks over in Sweden.
Yeah, again, it's an amazing talent that's going to a great position. Like, this is how we move forward. This is how we grow the sport, is by putting talented people in big positions.
Want to talk talented people? We got three right here in Manitoba that are fairly talented, and they're going to do great things, I think, because Hockey Manitoba announced mm-hmm. that the 2022-2023 Female Under-18 Program of Excellence that will compete and certainly get ready for the 2023 Canada Winter Games, scheduled from February 26th to March 5th, 2023 in Prince Edward Island. Everything happens in Prince Edward Island.
It's a great
now.
Place to go.
A fantastic place to go.
Great venue.
That team, that under-18 program of excellence team, will be coached by none other than Avro's head coach, Winnipeg Avro's head coach, Ashley Van Eglin, by Rink Hockey Academy Winnipeg's Maggie Litchfield-Med, And by head coach Joe Brandon, U15 AAA Wheat Kings, I believe they're provincial champions this year as well. Carissa Kirkup, three of the best Bisons to ever suit up here at the University mm-hmm. of Manitoba are now coming together and are going to coach this incredible team that's legitimately going to go. I'm going to say it right now; it's going to go out and win the Canada Winter Games.
Manitoba has become like a hotbed for women's hockey talent, so I would not be surprised.
Again, for those that are looking, Van Eglin's been the head coach of the U18 provincial team three times. She was the head coach for the U18 provincial team that captured a silver medal in 2012 in Dawson Creek, BC. Clearly, she's been there. She's done a little bit in terms of doing that, but she played 4 years for the Bison's women's hockey team, and then yeah, certainly she's gone through the BFL Canada Female High Performance Coaching Program, where she won Coach of the Year in 2020. So good for her. Van Eglin, again, joined by Maggie Litchfield Med. Again, she's done a ton of stuff. She served as an assistant coach with the Bisons before accepting her role with the Rink Hockey Academy. This is her first experience coaching with the U18 team. But again, Maggie's got tons of experience coaching at the U18 level, or the prep level with the Rink Hockey Academy. So she'll know exactly who she's looking for when it comes to picking players. And Kirkup has been doing outstanding work out in Brandon. She's the head coach, again, of that Wheat Kings team. Two seasons of hockey with the University of Maine and the University of Minnesota Duluth, followed by three with the Bisons. Again, she was a national champion in terms of that Bisons team. She coached in the Director's Cup for 3 years. She served as assistant coach with the U16 Junior Bison team. And again, she's out there in the Westman area, so she'll know all the players coming in from Westman in terms of recruiting and scouting out there. So this should be exciting, and certainly looking forward to seeing how Ashley, Maggie, and Carissa do coming up in February. We'll keep an eye on that team as well as to who they pick and how well they're doing. But they might even have to get out to a practice or two and maybe talk with the coaches, talk with the players
interviews
a little bit. Yeah, see what we can do. So see if we can swing that. But congratulations to Ashley. Congratulations to Maggie. Congratulations to Carissa. Speaking of congratulations, former Bison star defender Erica Reeder, you may remember that name a little bit, as Erica is a national champion as well here at the University of Manitoba. 25-year-old Erica Reeder, though, is stepping away from hockey. And again, that might be a shock. Like, mm-hmm. What's she doing? What's she planning on doing?
Last playing professionally out in Sweden.
One of Moto's best scorers last year, one of their top scorers last year. She joined the club in 2019. She had 1 year left on her contract. It was an option year for both her and the team. The team wanted to bring her back, but she opted out. Why? Because Erica Reeder has decided that now that she knows, and she even says this in terms of the interview that she gave, quote, "I've always had the dream of going to the Olympics. Canada's national ice hockey team is no longer an option for me, and I feel that I'm a good enough athlete to maybe switch to another sport." She is going to do that by switching to either cycling or rowing, or both, in aiming to represent Canada at the 2024 Paris Olympics or the 2028 Olympics down the road. That is incredible.
Unbelievable.
And again, everybody's going to say, well, you know, she's a hockey player. She's probably, you know, pretty good athlete as it is. For those that don't know, there's legend around these parts that in the final season that Erica played with the Bisons, for her to get ready, for her to get prepared for training camp, she rode her bike. She biked all the way from Regina, Saskatchewan to Winnipeg, Manitoba to get ready for training camp. If you want to talk about cycling, sounds like she's got a little bit of experience there.
Yeah.
Just a tad. Moto has said that they're, you know, if she's deciding on moving on, then good for her. If she wants to come back, they'll open the door for her.
Of course. So, why would you say no to a talent like that?
But that's the thing, though. So, I mean, obviously the relationship with Moto is fantastic. Yeah. Obviously she has an opportunity, you know, to do something really good. Perhaps there's going to be a little bit of circling back if she doesn't make the team. Again, we're hoping that she does make one of those teams, cycling, rowing, maybe even both for the Olympics. But if she doesn't, you know, make that team, perhaps a chance to go back to Moto and play mm-hmm. a little bit more hockey, which would be good. Yeah. So, she said that the group that she's leaving, she's pretty sad about it because she really enjoyed her time at Moto. But she's following her heart, following her dream, and can't falter for that.
Yeah,
so
you got to do that when you're young. You got to do that.
To me, it's just awesome. To me, that is fantastic. To me, I am so excited for Erica, and I really hope she does well. So
yeah, me too.
That is so cool.
An amazing athlete, an amazing person, and if anybody can do it, I'm sure she can.
The National Aboriginal Hockey Championships start out at Member 2 First Nation in Nova Scotia. They kick off in 2 days, technically. Everybody arrives, final arrivals on Saturday. Sunday, there's an official practice and accreditation day. Monday, May 9th, everything will get underway as the teams, the tournament, everybody will get going on that day. Female, there are 6 games. There's a preliminary five-round round robin, written poorly here, but that's fine. Manitoba's, again, going to be playing against Saskatchewan, Ontario, British Columbia, Atlantic, and the Eastern Door and North. The male division is basically the same. There's 7 teams there, though, as Manitoba, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, Atlantic, Ontario, Eastern Door and North, and then a North team. So there's 2 kind of North teams in there. We'll play in that for the male team. Just keeping an eye on things in terms of who's playing where. Manitoba plays Atlantic starting on Monday, May 9th. So we'll keep an eye on how they do. We'll bring you updates next week on the show because that's going to be fun. I'm just trying to see if there's any other updates. They have no scores on here. I'm trying to see who they played today. What's today? 12th? 12th? They were playing Saskatchewan today. So there's your answer. Saskatchewan. I don't know. How come there's no information on here? How does the National Aboriginal Hockey Championship have no information on scores? That's not good. I'm going to look that up right now. But there's the setup. They basically have already played a bunch of that stuff, and hopefully things are going well. Oh, here we are. Sorry. It was on the other tab there, results. So I find that information out. Again, here we go. Got some information here. Female hockey for Monday. So on Monday, they played Atlantic. Team Atlantic, Team Manitoba. Team Manitoba won 7-1. Good game. Go. Fantastic effort. Let's just see if there's any information on there. Jenna Gertson's on there. She was playing for the Avros, as we know. So that was really good. But I don't see anything else on there. So they won on Monday. Tuesday, if we can bring this up. Do I have any information here other than that? Don't have any information. Come on. Here we go. Game 6, they played here. Here we go. I got all the information here now. I can narrow this down. Game 6, they beat Team Ontario 4-3. So congratulations to them as they're up 2-0 now. Game 8, in terms of where they played against Team Eastern Door and the North. They won 12-2. Oh my gosh, like they're just crushing it. And then in the Wednesday game they played was Team BC. They beat them 7-1. Team Manitoba just crushing everybody out here.
Manitoba.
Today at 8:15, I'm just trying to see right now, they're up 5-1 on Saskatchewan right now.
Oh boy.
5-1 on Saskatchewan. Oh boy. It appears that they are set to enter the playoffs as the top team in the entire tournament.
This is Manitoba hockey. What are we...
That's what we talked about
here.
Talking about crushing everybody. So that'll be good. They'll get a bye through the qualifying round right to the semifinal round if they do that. Semifinal round will go on Friday, tomorrow evening at, looks like, 8 o'clock PER, Nova Scotia time. And then it's bronze medal and gold medal on Saturday. So if you're looking for that, you can go to there's a couple of websites that have the streaming available for that, but definitely go and check that information out if you're going to go and grab that information. Again, Manitoba's setup is fantastic. They've got all sorts of great players that are in there from all over the place, too, like Brandon, Lundar, Glenboro, Springfield. There's Cross Lake, Morgan Setti from Cross Lake, who plays for Pilot Mountain, is in there. A lot of great players that are playing for this team as well, so nice to see them. Katie Bassett, who we had a few years ago in here, who played in that tournament, who won gold medals with Canada, she's now an assistant coach of that team. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Talented people.
Katie now plays for the University of Regina, actually. So there's your tie-in in terms of where we're going with that. So there we go. There's Manitoba's crushing it out in Nova Scotia, which is awesome. So keep an eye on them. Hopefully they win a gold medal.
It's never in doubt.
Keep an eye. Hopefully they do. They bring something back. Turnbull Cup, the MJHL finally finished off their playoffs as Dauphin Kings ended up winning Game 7 over the Steinbeck Pistons 2-1 yesterday. Outstanding game, apparently, from what I read and what I heard in terms of the information as well. So congratulations to the Dauphin Kings as they're going to move on to play in the Centennial Cup in Estevan, Saskatchewan, against teams like Estevan, and officially Flin Flon will be in there as well. So we'll technically have 2 Manitoba teams in there,
yeah,
which will be awesome.
There you go.
So, in saying that, though, Dauphin had a great run in the playoffs as well. They ended up knocking off Winkler Flyers in the semifinal 4-1, and they ended up beating the Swan Valley Stampeders 4-2 in the opening round of the playoffs as well. So Dauphin moving on, getting a chance to go and represent, and we're going to cheer them on as well as they try and bring home the Centennial Cup to Manitoba. Speaking of Manitoba, the Moose are back in action tomorrow, down 2-1 to the Milwaukee Admirals. Connor Ingram likely going to be in net tomorrow for the Admirals, so if you want to see Nashville starting goaltender in the playoffs, come down to the rink tomorrow. Come down to Canada Life Center. You can see him play there.
Yeah, and you can see him crush the hopes and dreams of the Manitoba Moose.
Manitoba, according, and again, I don't have the official number, Manitoba had something like 75 shots in the first two games and only scored 3 goals. Gotta score. And then they did. They came home on Wednesday, came home yesterday, and put up 5 on Milwaukee, won 5-2. So,
oh, you think you're gonna score goals on a guy that held the Colorado Avalanche to 2?
I'm just going to say right now, I'm just going to say up front, get out and cheer these guys on, because Manitoba's got a great team this year, a chance to really sort of keep it going, keep it rolling. If they do win, they'll end up playing one of Rockford or Chicago, so it'll be an Illinois destination if Manitoba's to win, so... There you go. Here's the information on them. Keep an eye on the Moose as they go forward as well. One last piece of news before we get out of here today, Jay. And I know this is a piece of news that you like because obviously we talked about it a lot a couple of weeks ago. The OHL's Niagara Ice Dogs, you may remember we did a story on how the owner and the coach were basically just vile individuals and
yes.
had a misogynistic text back and forth on a WhatsApp chatter. And they got turned into the OHL's David Branch, who's the commissioner of the league. And he threw the book at them and suspended both of them indefinitely for basically being complete jerks.
Mm-hmm.
The OHL's Niagara Ice Dogs are now for sale.
You took their toys away, and now they're going to go home.
Since they can't be at games, we're not going to go and support these guys anymore. So the Ice Dogs are apparently for sale. Reportedly, according to reports, hence the reportedly part, the team is very close to being sold to a gentleman in Brantford by the name of Darren DeDobler. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I hope I am. Sorry, Darren, if I'm not. Darren DeDobler, who owns two other teams in Ontario. He owns and operates the Ontario Junior A Hockey League's Brantford 99ers, who played at the Wayne Gretzky Sports Center, and the Greater Ontario Junior Hockey League's Brantford Bandits, who called the Brantford Civic Center home. He legitimately kicked tires in 2015 when the Erie Otters were for sale. So it sounds like he's back on the I want to own an OHL team setup. But for a guy who owns two other teams, this might be a prudent investment for the OHL to encourage because it sounds like he knows what he's doing when it comes to hockey.
Yeah, and it's always good when teams are in a... The junior hockey in Canada can be very volatile, like a very volatile market. You've got junior A teams, junior B teams that are... set up and then fold or get sold and moved around all the time. So having a franchise like the Niagara Ice Dogs go to a stable place where presumably the owner is good enough that he's and well connected enough that he has two other teams that he owns and operates, I think it's great for them. It's great for, you know, we're seeing it here in Manitoba with the Winnipeg Ice, and they're just buying up every team that comes for sale in Manitoba so they can build this weird pipeline to junior hockey that they're trying to build. But it's always a good thing when you have somebody who is successful and who is seemingly doing it for the right reasons. It seems a lot like when you buy a junior hockey team, you're going to lose money. You're basically doing it for the love of the game.
In theory, yeah.
Unless you own the London Knights. So to have a guy that not only has owned a team before, owns two teams currently, I think is a great move for the OHL if that sale does go through. My question is, how hard would it be for the guys that currently own the team to put in the work to prove themselves as good people and go through some kind of redemption where they do some volunteer work, they take some classes, they prove that they are better people than what was shown, and they can go back to owning a hockey team.
When you get your hand slapped, you don't really want to stick around very much. The embarrassment alone is enough to drive you away, it seems. So why correct the problem? Why not just walk away from it?
Exactly.
So
why put in the work when you can just leave?
Speaking about correcting problems, halfway through the first period, Carolina-Boston, 0-0 still. So there's your update if you're listening to the show and not listening to hockey right now. But we are basically out of time, Jay. We got about 2 minutes left in terms of our extended time. Skippy live tonight, folks. He is here. Skip, you want, are you out there? Are you coming in or what? Where is that guy? Where is he? There you are. You can get in here. You can sit in here with us. We all know that you're good. Skip is here. Skip, how are you? How you been doing, bud? Yeah, I haven't seen. Yeah, for sure. Hop, grab a seat there. What are you on? Number five there? It's Mike five.
Number four.
Four? There we go. Four. Skip, there we go.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing?
How are you? How have you been, Skip? I haven't seen you forever, and it's good to see you again.
I'm broken, but I'm here.
You're here. That's okay. That's okay. You're doing all right then. So we're going to get you set up on your show right away because we got to get that going. Any hockey chatter you want to bring in for the last minute or so here, last 30 seconds or so?
Nothing that you guys haven't covered, actually.
All right.
I don't have live TV, so I'm a stats junkie. So I've been following everything kind of after the fact. Look at the stats every morning and see who's scoring. Who the hell is Carter Varkey?
Carter Verhaeghe is the only guy scoring. Yeah, Carter Verhaeghe, yeah.
10 points in 5 games. That's all I have to say.
Florida Panthers go-to right there.
He was great for my fantasy team this year, I will say that much.
And you know what? He didn't...
I can say that. I was 6th in my fantasy.
Okay.
But I won the playoffs, so
there you
I won
go.
The championship.
There you go.
That's all
nice.
I have to say.
Skippy with a championship. I like it. We're going to get out of here. We got, like I said, less than a minute left to go here before Skippy gets in here. We'll get out of here, leave him to your ears, and certainly with all the music he plays, you find something that you like on there. Free Range Radio coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been the Hockey Show for another week, folks. Take care. Take it easy. Lots of exit interviews next week, folks, so be prepared as we have 7 teams going to be off Survivor Island next week. Till then, we'll see you then, folks. Have a good one.